Hi everyone, and welcome to season 2 of the Everyday Activist podcast. If you're new here, my name is Eugenia Chow, and I run the Instagram account Eugrenia. The Everyday Activist podcast is founded under the belief that there's no one-size-fits-all approach to activism, and anyone can get involved. This week's guest is Veronica Mulenga, also known as Earth Warrior on Instagram. She's a climate and environmental justice activist based in Zambia. She's the founder of Earth Warrior, an online platform dedicated to educating people about the climate crisis, and she is also part of the Youth Climate Save movement, a global movement that defends animals and the planet. In this episode, we discuss her vision for climate education, climate justice and its impact on people, and gender disparities in the decision-making realm of the climate crisis. Veronica is so passionate about her advocacy and everything that she does online and in person with regards to climate justice activism. I learned a lot from this conversation with Veronica, and I found her perspective to be very insightful. So I hope you enjoy this discussion just as much and enjoy the rest of this episode. Hi, Veronica, and welcome to this episode of the Everyday Activist podcast. It's really an honor to have you here, and I can't wait to talk to you more about climate education, climate justice, and also gender equality in climate change discourse today.
Hi, Eugenia. Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored to be here, and I'm so excited.
So firstly, could you please introduce yourself? Where are you from? How would you describe your work? And what led you to become a climate activist?
Okay, so I am Veronica Mulenga, and I am a climate and environmental justice activist from Zambia. For those of you who don't know what that is, it is a small developing country in sub-Saharan Africa. I am the founder of Earth Warrior. It is currently like an online platform that educates people about the climate crisis in terms of climate justice and environmental justice, as well as just the climate crisis in general. I've always cared about the environment prior to becoming an activist and about conservation from a very young age. My parents have always loved nature. They love gardening and they love planting trees and stuff like that. So I was always exposed to nature growing up. So I guess that is what made me love it so much. So yeah, I think that sums up how I kind of loved it, then how I became an activist. When I learned about the climate crisis and about environmental justice, I learned about it through a documentary on television, and that was when I had finished high school. So I was kind of shocked that our school curriculum didn't include like climate education, because I learned about it afterwards. Yeah, so that's when I just started diving deep into it and doing my own research, and I learned about how our human activities are irreversibly changing our environment, and also how that us in the global south that contribute the least to the climate crisis are the ones suffering the most. So when I learned about that, that's when I decided to make my online platform. But before that, I first used to just talk about the climate crisis to my family and my friends. At first they kind of got annoyed because I always just talk about it to them all the time, and then later on I just decided to make an online platform. That was how I decided to make Earth Warrior.
So you mentioned how it's the countries in the global south that bear the brunt of climate change more so than those in the global north, even though the countries in the global north are the ones that emit more carbon emissions and create more environmental damage. So how would you say that Zambia is affected by climate change? Do you see these effects very clearly? And I guess if you do, how and where do you see them manifested?
We actually have power outages every single day, like because we use hydroelectric power as a country, and that is power from like the dam. I'm sure people know what hydroelectric power is. And because of less rainfall in the country, our major rivers have low water. So in order to save water, they have to turn off their power, like plan power cuts every single day. So they can last up to 8 hours or sometimes even 14, or sometimes they don't come back. Like they take a whole day or 2 days and come back later. So that is one way the climate crisis is affecting us, like daily, every single day. Just imagine having no power every single day. And also in terms of agriculture, Zambia, our staple food is maize. So most people don't have a lot of money like to buy irrigation systems, and maize uses a lot of water. So most people depend on the rainfall for that, like in order to grow the maize. So because of the climate crisis now, we have less rainfall. So most farmers are like struggling in order to grow like the staple food because there's less rainfall. So that's like two examples of how the climate crisis is affecting us like directly right now.
Yeah. So do you notice that there are other youth like yourself or people in general who are taking action against these issues as well in your area?
Yes. There's actually a Fridays for Future Zambia. Like, it's currently in the works. We don't really have like an Instagram page just yet, but like we have like a WhatsApp group where we talk to each other about these things, and we like send letters to the government and stuff like that, like to make them act quickly. Cause sometimes like, we can also do a few things by ourselves, like how to adapt. Cause most people don't, like most people aren't educated about the climate crisis in the first place. So we also write letters to the government, tell them like to include climate education into the curriculum so people can learn how to adapt to the climate crisis. And yeah, we use social media like to send messages to the leaders, or they give us like Facebook pages on how you can talk to people in the government. And yeah, that's what we usually do. And we also do strikes, like we're organizing a strike right now. That will happen sometime in January when like the COVID-19 restrictions lower. And then yeah, we also do that as well.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier that your school or schools in general lack good climate education. So do you think climate education in general is lacking, as in there's no conversation about environmental issues at all? Or are there conversations, but they're just lacking a more intersectional approach that covers climate justice and more nuanced discussion about these environmental issues?
Yeah, I feel what is lacking is just the global education community has done like little to advance with wide scale climate education. Like, yeah, some people know about climate change and they just know the term like climate change, but they don't really understand what it means. So, that's like mostly what is common. And there are very few countries in the world that have like climate education in their school curriculum and stuff like that. For us, it just isn't talked about much. Like, unless maybe like ask someone about it. Our teachers don't really have, it's not really included in their like teaching requirements or anything like that. So you just usually find out on your own, either through the internet or something like that. So yeah, that's what I've noticed mostly.
Yeah. So what is your vision for climate education? How do you want to see these kind of discussions implemented into schools and in general?
My vision for climate education is for it to be compulsory and included in like all school curriculums, and it's taught at an early age because obviously the earlier the better. It will help people understand and address the impacts of the climate crisis earlier, and it will also encourage changes in attitudes and behaviors of people. Like, people can adopt more sustainable lifestyles earlier if they know about it earlier, I feel like. And it can play an essential role in increasing adaptation. It will also empower people to adopt sustainable lifestyles. Yeah, that's what I think my vision is.
Yeah. Do you think an element of climate education involves giving students access to nature as well, or like including that in the curriculum? So they're more frequent field trips, or like they learn how to compost, or they're more engaged with nature. Do you think that's a crucial
part? Yeah. Yeah, I feel like it's very crucial because sometimes you can just be like learning about climate change and you're not really like connected to nature, so you won't really like care as much. But if you do a lot of like compost activities, recycling, stuff like that, if they include that as well into the curriculum, maybe people will be more like excited about doing these kinds of things instead of just someone talking about it and in a classroom setting. Yeah. So it would be much better if people can like go outside and actually see nature and maybe even end up loving it and wanting to take care and conserve it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I assume you starting Earth Warrior, your platform on Instagram, and is it also on other platforms or just social media so far?
No, so far it's just on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just got the name from right before I started my activism. I came across like the definition of an Earth Warrior from the internet, like randomly. I was just like looking at things and then it randomly like popped up, and it means one who defends the earth, its people and all things in the natural world that cannot defend themselves. So when I saw that at the time, like it really resonated with me at the time. And yeah, it just really defined like what I wanted to do. So that is how I ended up choosing the name Earth Warrior from then on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So far it's on Instagram, but yeah, I'm willing to expand, like maybe go onto other social networks.
Yeah.
So far it's just Instagram.
Yeah. Is it just a one person initiative right now?
Yes, it's only me so far. But I'm also part of like the youth climate save movement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one who organizes Youth Climate Save Zambia. And then there's also just Climate Save Zambia as well. So we do like a few collaborations from there together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Earth Warrior is mostly just me alone. Yeah.
Yeah. So your aim is, I suppose, to create a space for this climate education that's lacking in school curriculums and make it more accessible for people in general.
Yes. Yeah, I'd really like, one of my, I have a lot of roles, like they're scattered. Because there's so many like injustices happening at the same time. But if I were to pick any, yeah, I would definitely pick climate education.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also pick gender equality as well. Because
mm-hmm.
I feel like that one is also one of the important ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess speaking of that, what do you think are some climate issues that are not discussed or acted upon enough in terms of this space and in terms of this movement? Where do you think people can direct their attention more towards?
Yeah, sometimes when you talk about climate justice, people just think about like the weather mm-hmm. and stuff like that. They don't really talk about how it's affecting people like directly. It's mostly about, oh, it's getting like, you know, it's hurting the animals, which is okay as well, but yeah, I would focus more on like climate justice
mm-hmm.
because that is how it's affecting more of like people instead of just the weather and stuff like that. So I'd really focus my attention on climate justice.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess just to explain for anyone who isn't really familiar with the term climate justice and how this differs from climate change or the climate crisis, how would you describe the term climate justice?
So first of all, I would start with the word justice, because the word justice means equal treatment and fair treatment. I would start with the word justice and basically go on to say climate justice is like the fair treatment of all people, like everyone, and that the adverse impacts of the climate crisis are not felt equally, like for us in the global south, we feel more of the impacts directly compared to people in the global north. And so, yeah. And climate change is not evenly distributed, and that is the poorest countries and the most vulnerable people within them, particularly economies that are dependent on agriculture, like us, we depend a lot on rainfall to grow our crops and stuff like that. So with the climate crisis happening, like it's really affecting our agriculture. And it is the most developed countries that are causing the most devastating environmental ripples to us in the developing world. Yeah, that is what I would like explain climate justice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just now you talked about how gender equality was something that you really try to advocate for as a climate activist. Why would you say that climate justice is a gender equality issue, and what angle do you take to address this in your own experience?
The climate crisis disproportionately affects women. Like there's a lot of research that suggests that, and there are also facts that prove it, mm-hmm. because women already have like less access to basic human rights, like the ability to move freely and the ability to acquire land. Those are just like two examples. And we are also more likely to live in poverty compared to men. So as the climate crisis intensifies, like women are the ones that are going to like struggle the most as well, because women compared to men often have like a muted voice in shaping decisions and influencing policy. Mm-hmm. Like we make up a large percentage of poor communities worldwide that rely on natural resources for their livelihoods, like particularly in the developing world. Like most women here, like most people in like poor communities, they have to fetch water, like they have to walk long distances in order to get water and stuff like that, while the men don't really do that kind of stuff. So when there's less rainfall and stuff like that, like we are the ones that usually get impacted the most compared to men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what do you think is something that can be done to address this, and in what ways does the Climate Save movement and I guess also Earth Warrior hope to combat this issue of gender inequality in terms of the climate movement as well?
For me, it's just to include women. Like, mm-hmm. if successful action on climate change depends on the engagement of women, because most of the time women are left out of like conversations, they don't really have like a seat at the table. Like even through like the COPs, like the COP25, like the previous COPs, don't really include women there. Like you have to like fight your way in like one of those spaces. So I feel like the best thing you could do is just to include women, to include us in making decisions and making policies, and just basically include us in a lot of the decisions that are made about the climate crisis, so we can like add our input to things instead of like a man thinking of what is best for us. Like, it's better for us to just tell them what we think, and that will definitely help a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So just being included is like the best thing.
Yeah, and since your involvement with the climate movement, and as like a climate activist, have you seen progress in terms of female representation in these conversations and as of being a part of these decisions as well?
Yeah, most of the organizations I'm with are mostly like a lot of women most of the time. Like, mm-hmm. there's really a lot of like men involved.
That's true, but, actually.
Yeah, like even most activists I see are usually women. Mm-hmm. Like I don't really know a lot of like male activists, like youth activists. It's usually women. So yeah, I mean, when it comes to activism, yeah, women are there, but just at the top, like where the decisions are made, that's where the problem is. So yeah, I don't really see like a lot of change in that area. Just mostly in activism is where I see like most women. But when it comes to like the government and stuff like that, they're not really a lot of women making the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious because I've also noticed that a lot of in these grassroots movement spaces, a lot of the activists are women, or mm-hmm. yeah, even in like the youth spaces, it's mostly girls. So I was wondering, yeah. why do you think this is, perhaps? I was wondering if you perhaps have thought about this and have any opinions on why this might be the case.
Just inequality, yeah, basically. Like, women just, I don't know, like, that's usually how, like, women are usually just left out, like, basically, from the start. Like, most people like saying like it's a man's world and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
because like women have always been left out of decisions from like a long time ago. It's always been this way. So even now when we want to put like in our input, maybe it's not taken as seriously as maybe like if I were to say something about the climate crisis and then like someone like a man was next to me talking about the exact same thing, they would probably take his listen to his opinion more than mine or something like that. So like it's just usually, I think it's from the past, women have always been viewed as staying home, like not really working, like those kind of views. So I guess when we try to talk about like the climate crisis and climate injustices, they don't really take us as seriously as they would take men. Yeah, so I think that is one of the reasons.
Yeah, I suppose also because it's usually the men who are given these established positions in like government
Yeah.
policy and stuff. It usually turns to women to take on grassroots organizing where there isn't already like an established role for them to take.
Yeah.
Perhaps that's another reason as well, now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, I completely agree. 'Cause they usually leave us with like the little things, the things that won't really make an impact, but then the men are the ones that usually take up the things that really make huge impacts and huge changes. So yeah, I just feel like that's where like the inequalities come into shape, you know.
It's just the roles that are more visible, but it doesn't necessarily mean that their impact is more influential. Yeah, so also on your page on Earth Warrior, I noticed that you also talk a lot about how systemic racism relates to climate injustices. So I was wondering if you could talk a bit about how these two issues that are often addressed separately are interlinked, and how we can tackle them simultaneously as people who are involved in the climate space.
Yeah, so for systemic racism, I feel like it dictates who benefits from activities that produce greenhouse gases and who suffers the most from the consequences of that. Like, for example, with BIPOC communities, we are exposed to far more air pollution than we produce. Like, we usually don't emit a lot of carbon emissions, but we're the ones that are breathing in like the bad air, and we're the ones that are suffering the most. And racial inequality also means that the people most at risk by the climate crisis have like the fewest resources to cope. Like people who can't afford air conditioning suffer the most from heat waves. Like for example, like us here, most people don't have like structures to like even accommodate an air conditioner. Like their houses don't really have electricity and they don't have power in the first place. So even if you were to put in an air conditioner, it wouldn't really work because most people can't even afford to pay for power in the first place. So I feel like climate change and racial injustices share the same roots and have to be addressed together and not separately. And how we can tackle them, we can tackle by going beyond what I've noticed online. It's like we can tackle going beyond hashtag activism and by listening to the voices at the front lines and educating yourself on the history and the consequences of systemic racism.
I guess what advice would you give to someone who wants to learn more about this, but also who wants to begin their journey towards climate activism and be more involved with this movement in general?
Yeah, I feel like you could mostly talk to the voices at the front lines, like the people that are experiencing it firsthand are the ones that can give you like the most input on what's happening with the injustices. And how to become a climate activist, what can I say? In action for actions, I would say you can educate others, like just have conversations with people talking about the climate crisis with your family or your friends. You can follow social media accounts that relate to activism. You can join protests if you want. If you don't want to, it's okay. Like you can, maybe if you want, you can do online striking. That's what I do. I usually do online strikes every Friday, inspired by Greta Thunberg. Yeah, but yeah, you don't really have to do all of these things. It's just up to you, whatever makes you feel comfortable. But yeah, you can just, even just having a conversation with someone about the climate crisis in your family really helps a lot.
So, in your experience, what is the most effective way to have a productive conversation with someone about the climate crisis? What are some things that have worked, and what are some things that don't seem to work as effectively?
I would say the approach. Make sure you don't approach them like in a way where you're like telling them things like you're demanding or you're intimidating or something like that. You just have like maybe talk about things that they love, like or places that they love. Like you talk about how the climate crisis is affecting something that like a place that they care about, something like that. You can have that kind of approach, and just don't be intimidating against you. Just like listen to them as well, like listen to their input as well, And yeah, just take a soft approach to it. Don't be defensive or stuff like that. I think that helps. That's what I've noticed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's so important to be empathetic with their perspective as well, and make sure you don't just shut them down immediately. Otherwise, you won't have a conversation. Are your family members and like your friends in general pretty on board with the whole climate action thing? Are they pretty supportive of all the work that you do as well?
Yeah, at first they didn't really, like, because I have 4 siblings. Like, we're actually 5 girls in our family. So, yeah, and I'm the second oldest, and then the rest are younger than me. So, at first, when I first learned about it, I also started telling them about it. But at first, they didn't really, like, care most of the time, like, because they didn't understand at first. So, when I started talking about the way it affects, like, things that they love, like, and stuff like that. So, when I started telling them in that way, that's when they were more, like, concerned about it. And I would just give them examples. Like, I would tell them to watch documentaries about, like, the climate crisis and stuff like that. I would recommend, like, YouTube videos or, like, podcasts for them to listen to learn more. And yeah, that's how, like, they started learning about it and actually, like, getting involved. Yeah, but they're very supportive. Like, my whole family is supportive about it. And my parents in general have always loved, like, nature and conserving it and stuff like that. Like, my mom has a garden, like, in the backyard, and she always tells us the importance of growing your own food. Sometimes, like, instead of, like, always going to buy, like, food from the store, you can just grow your own vegetables and stuff like that. So, yeah, they're very supportive in terms of, like, helping me with my activism and also taking action from the things that I, like, tell them to help me with and stuff like that.
That's really nice.
Yeah,
it definitely helps to have family that is supportive in terms of, like, your activism as well. And it's nice to know that your mom is so involved with, like, nature and also taking care of her own garden and stuff.
Yeah, because if they weren't supportive, like, it would have been much harder. But
yeah,
I would still have gone on. But it would, yeah, it's just helps just knowing that, like, there are other people are supporting you as well.
Yeah. So actually, you're one of the first guests I've interviewed to really, like, embrace the term being a climate activist. I think a lot of people shy away from the term because it has very strong connotations.
Oh yeah.
But I think, yeah, it's, like, great that you embrace it. So I was wondering what being an activist means to you.
To me, being an activist, it just means fighting for what you want, fighting for what you believe is right, I feel like. Yeah, it is when you have, like, when you have the desire and the energy to do something about an injustice, and while doing so, like, being okay with discomfort, because obviously you will encounter situations where, like, another person doesn't agree with what you're fighting for, and you're just being okay with that. Like, yeah, mostly just fighting for what you believe in, yeah, mostly. And you could do that through, like, talking to someone, or through art, or through music, or through posting something, just whatever makes you feel good, like, finding out what works best for you. It doesn't really have to be, like, you have to, like, protest, and you have to do this and that, like, whatever just makes you feel good, and just what really just fighting for what you want, yeah, fighting for what you truly believe is right. And could be through anything,
yeah,
whatever you're comfortable with. Yeah,
definitely. Have there been any challenges you have encountered so far in your climate activism journey, or I guess, yeah, what has been the biggest obstacle for you, if anything?
Sometimes, like, maybe, like, my voice not really being included. They'll be like, oh yeah, she's a girl, she's from the global south, like, she doesn't really know anything, like, she's not really educated, like, she mostly learned about this, like, through her own research and stuff like that. Yeah, so those are, like, challenges. And also trolls, like, you get a lot of trolls, like, yeah, when you're doing climate activism, you have to it's more like expected, unfortunately, like, you're obviously going to expect people trolling you, but for the most part, I just, like, when it comes to trolls, I just ignore most of the time. Like, I don't really engage with them, because sometimes you can be someone like who has zero followers, like you can be arguing with someone who's like, you don't even know if it's a person at the end of the day. Maybe it's like a robot or something like that. So yeah, I usually ignore it, but if it really like impacts me, maybe like I can have like, I try to have like a conversation with them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, sometimes they actually listen to you, but like for most of the time they just want like an argument, or they want to make you look stupid or something like that. So yeah, sometimes that's why I usually like ignore it most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, most of the time they just want to cause drama online. They probably don't care that much about what's happening. They just want to provoke trouble.
Yeah.
So you mentioned how your climate journey started with a documentary, and you've talked about how, you've shared some documentary with your sisters as well. So if anyone listening to this wants to learn more about any of the topics that we've discussed today, what are some resources you would recommend to them? So they can be documentaries, articles, Instagram accounts, anything of the sort.
Yeah, there are so many. For social media, I would recommend like following maybe like intersectional environmentalists.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they talk a lot about like intersectionality. They talk about climate justice. They talk about environmental justice. They also have like a website, and they also have a YouTube, recently started a YouTube channel. Yeah, so you can learn a lot from them. You can also follow accounts like, I found activists like Michaela Loach. Like, I always learn so much from her.
Yeah.
She always talks about climate justice, and she also includes the Global South. And yeah, Green Girl Leah as well is one of like my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
You can learn a lot from her. And Years of Living Dangerously, that was actually the documentary that I first watched that taught me about climate change. So they have like an account on Instagram, and they also have like a documentary, like you can find it on YouTube. Chicks for Climate is also like a good account to follow on Instagram. And yeah, you can also listen to podcasts. I like the Yikes podcast, and I like Dismantled, and even this podcast, Everyday Podcast, because I've learned so much already about like a lot of climate injustices from other people and stuff like that. Climate in Color is also like a good account.
Previous episode.
Yeah, for articles.
Was it her?
Yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed it. For articles, Yale 360. I would also suggest that. Like, you can learn a lot about like the climate crisis as well. Yeah, I think those are like a few I would suggest. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, is there anything that we haven't discussed today that you would want to share with anyone listening, or anything I didn't ask that you wish I asked?
Just continue. I would advise people like who want to get into like activism, just to continue to learn and to unlearn as well, because sometimes you make mistakes along the way, and some things that you learned in the past like aren't really like the like the right way of doing things. So you usually like unlearn a lot of things, and you have to be okay, like being okay with unlearning as well is okay. Don't always think like you, and also you also make a lot of mistakes. I feel like sometimes people expect you to be perfect like when you're an activist, but you also make a lot of mistakes along the way, and you have to be okay with that, because you learn from your mistakes and you only improve as you go on. And yeah, I think that is what I would have to say.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that was a big theme of 2020 as well.
Unlearning.
Yeah, so much unlearning. And I think especially because people were on social media so much more with quarantine and everything.
Yeah.
It was like constantly unlearning and learning on so many different topics, which is always good.
Yes. Yes, I definitely agree. Like there are a lot of things that I didn't know that I thought I knew. So yeah, I unlearned a lot, and yeah, I'm happy to continue unlearning.
Yeah.
And learning at the same time.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Everyday Activist podcast. If you enjoyed it, please be sure to rate and review the show, because that makes a huge difference in helping me get the word of the podcast out. If you've gained anything from listening to this podcast, please do consider supporting the show through a one-off coffee donation or even a monthly donation if you can. This would help compensate speakers for their valuable time and contribute greatly to continuing the show. Thank you again for listening, and I'll see you next Monday.